pretty full. But if anyone has any other items that they would like to see discussed, maybe we can squeeze them in. Is there any other thing? No? Okay. So then we move on to the first talk. Where is Nick? Where did Nick go? Oh, there. Nick Hiller.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Nick Hilliard of INEX, and I want to have a little chat about IRR toolset and RPSL. More about IRR toolset, actually, and rather less about RPSL. It's actually slightly unfortunate because RPSL is very much associated with the database working group, which, of course, is back-to-back with this session, so we're stuck. RPSL, of course, or at least IRR toolset, brings its own problems because we really have a bit of a problem with it. It's more about awakening the undead. It's not a very nice piece of software, unfortunately. Now, just as a bit of a background, the whole project started out some number of years ago, where there was this grand idea. And the grand idea was really all about documentation and about, you know, creating a central repository or a bunch of central repositories where we would have, you know, a specified routing policy written up, and you know, we could somehow use that, you know, to arbitrate, you know, with disputes in routing policy, or to use it to work out, you know, problems with what was going on in the internet. And you know, some people thought, you know, hey, that's cool. You know, we can use it to automate configuration as well. So we'll you know, we'll kind of create glue. We'll, you know, write software and all of that. So this was called the Routing Arbiter Project, the Routing Arbiter Project, if you're American, and it was started in Merritt. In fact, it started out with RIPE 81, which kind of devolved into RIPE 181, and because this was seen as a pretty good way of describing internet objects in a standard way. This was long before the horrors of XML were unleashed on the world. And people figured, well, you know, we can extend RIPE 181, and, you know, we'll kind of build, you know, client software and server software, and the server software is going to, you know, sort of, you know, do the parsing of the objects, make sure they're all okay, and then the client software, you know, we'll just kind of do this funky stuff, and that was fine. So the Routing Arbiter project split off into two areas. There was the Routing Arbiter database, RADB, which is still in existence, and there was RA toolset, which was actually fairly shortly moved to Div7 in ISI in California, where other august institutions like ICANN, ISOC, and things like that hang out or started in. There was another project sort of going on in RIPE around the same time called PRIDE, which was the policy-based routing implementation and deployment in Europe. It's a bit of a handful, but it ended up actually with some quite useful tools, because this was still in the era where CIDR was, you know, sort of just being introduced, and you know, we needed, you know, sort of all sorts of tools, you know, to help us with the translation, or at least the transformation from classful routing to classless routing. And RA toolset at this stage included a whole bunch of, you know, kind of useful stuff: CIDR Advisor, PRPath, libRPSL, RTConfig, and so forth. And that was fine, you know, things tooled along. You know, these tools were written, and you know, they're kind of, they never, some of them worked quite well, some of them didn't. RTConfig was always a little bit about a bit of a problem, in that it didn't work terribly well. Of course, you know, funding runs out, and eventually the RIPE NCC took over the development of the whole RPSL NG project, where people suddenly realized that, okay, well, look, RPSL is really only about IPv4, and we need something to do with multicast and IPv6 as well. And RPSL was also enhanced to include all sorts of other objects like, I don't know, sort of peering sets and router sets and filter sets and, you know, that sort of thing. And at around this time, the project was renamed to be IRR Toolset because it wasn't really the Routing Arbiter project anymore. It was a little bit more international. Ripe hired a developer, Katie Patricia, to fix things up, and she did, you know, she did a really good job. But like a lot of these things, it came to a grinding halt because. Well, the bulk of the work had been done, rtconfig and librpsl and pval, and you know these sort of programs had become multi-protocol aware, and there were a couple of other programs like that were kind of in there, and you know the code was beginning to stink a little bit at this stage. The specification had simply become too large. The code was becoming too complicated, and very few people actually understood what on earth was going on in the code, which sort of led the way into the sort of the teenage years of IRR Toolset. Nobody really understood what was going on. Nobody wanted to hack it, and of course the problem is, you know, we're kind of all network engineers. We're not C++ coders. You know, and this was like really, really complicated C++. You know, this wasn't just simple stuff. The project was handed over to ISI and ISC, who had a certain amount of interest in doing something with it, but not really a huge amount, and it kind of eventually just kind of sat in the corner. Nobody was really terribly interested in it. The ripe NCC didn't really want it. ISC didn't, you know, just didn't really have any resources to do anything with it, and the result was that it just suffered massive bit rot. C++ moved on, and nobody was really doing a whole lot with it. It didn't actually even compile, particularly on most operating systems. This was pretty bad, really. In fact, the only reason that it exists is because the people from the OpenBSD project, or some people who had commit access to the OpenBSD project, had, you know, created a bunch of patch sets, they had, you know, maintained it to a certain extent, you know, to the extent that it would actually still compile on OpenBSD, which was which was really rather useful. It is, as I said, spaghetti inside. It is just a tangled mess of inheritance and, you know, sort of all sorts of classes. And there's this old joke in C++, you know, or at least in C, you know, where you're comparing all of these languages and, you know, about shooting your foot off. And, you know, in C, you just shoot your foot off. But, you know, when you shoot your foot off with C++, you know, you blow half the neighborhood away. It's horrific, and there's all sorts of modules in there like that are really, really complicated. I mean, there's, for example, one of the things that really very few people understand is the regular expression management. And of course, if you're dealing with complicated regular expressions, you need to convert them into finite state automata. And there's a whole library in there for dealing with conversion from regular expressions to finite state automata, or at least to non-deterministic finite state automata, and back again. And this is like really, really complicated stuff. Nobody understands this terribly well except people who write regular expression libraries. It's not good. There is also another problem, and that is the licensing. The licensing is an absolute crock. And there were one or two people from, in fact, the Debian project who documented the licenses. And the licenses came out to be about 70 kilobytes worth of information, because each particular group that had worked on the code had imposed their own separate licensing restrictions. And probably the most difficult part to deal with is actually this regular expression to non-deterministic finite state automata code, which is jointly licensed by ISI and by IBM, And includes a non-commercial clause. So if there's anybody out there that's using IR toolset for commercial gain, I'm sorry, you're in breach of license. You're going to have to stop doing it. So this is a problem. I don't know how easily it can be resolved, or if it can be resolved at all, because sure as hell, nobody in ISI is going to be terribly interested in this. I'm not sure what their current licensing policy is for projects like this. It is very unlikely that IBM has any corporate recollection of ever having dealt with this project. I think actually they might have stolen the project from, stolen the code from GateD or something like that. It's really not terribly clear. But getting back to the real world for a moment, there were still some diehards out there. There were people like me who actually kind of used it to a certain extent. Even though, in fact, it probably just deserved to rot in its grave. I'm kind of dissing it here. There are some absolute gems of code in there. I mean, there's such seriously smart stuff in there. I kind of look at it and I think, wow, that's amazing. And the project, the people who wrote it, in particular Cengiz. I mean, they were just like seriously smart guys. But unfortunately, they left something that was so complicated that. That it's just completely unmaintainable. In particular, INEX, that's the size of our primary root server configuration file. It's half a meg. And that's for 30-something clients. It's not actually a huge number. 8,500 lines. If that scales up, and in particular in larger internet exchanges where, it does have to scale up, to sort of, hundreds of clients, you have to have some means of generating router configurations of this size. You cannot maintain them manually, and you need a tool like IR toolset. So one afternoon, I kind of had a go at it, and like all of these problems, you start off and you sort of peel a bit of paint off here or there, and fairly rapidly it. Descended into the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it was pretty savage after that. I committed quite a lot of damage actually. Cider Advisor, of course, very useful in mid 1990s, not so useful in 2009. That was gone. PR Path and PR Traceroute from the Pride tools. Yeah, I mean, PR Traceroute was, in theory, slightly useful, but in practice, probably not particularly. And you see, these tools had just been sort of shunted into the code, and bits of libraries had been, dumped in there, from all over the internet, and there was no cohesion. So I decided, hang that, they're gone, and I kill them. AOE and ROE, the Autonomous System Object Editor and the Route Object Editor. These needed a special treatment with a silver bullet just to make sure they're dead. They now compile. If you go back into the commit just before they were removed, one of them compiles. Actually, the AOE compiles. ROE is completely dead. Because it was never updated to support multi-protocol RPSL. There were a bunch of bugs. Bugs happen. I added a couple of features, readline support in rtconfig, and a few development things like that, rebuild of the autoconfig environment, and a few other bits and bobs in rtconfig. This is what happened to the code. That's what we killed. And that's about what we kept. The original code base was 112,000 lines of code. We're now down to about 40,000 of almost incomprehensible data. And these are the development targets, Ubuntu, FreeBSD, Debian, Solaris, and macOS. macOS simply because an awful lot of network people, as you can see in the room, everybody's using Macs these days. Whenever people are playing around at home, they just want to, settle down for a nice evening of messing around with RPSL and IR toolset. They'll probably do it on their Mac rather than the sort of Solaris server in the down in the data center. But this is slightly away from the central point, which is that I did an awful lot of damage, and the project kind of just needs to die. It's too complicated. Nobody understands it. We need, if we are to be in any way serious about managing RPSL and turning it into something useful that people can, you know, develop and actually generate router configurations and stuff like that, we need to stop pretending that this is actually a useful code base to work from. Unfortunately, it isn't. Unfortunately for me, because I put quite a bit of work into it. Unfortunately for other people like Katie and Cengiz, it's simply too complicated. Okay, on RPSL. This is just a quick graph of the object spread in the RIPE database. And we have inet nums up here, and then domains and routes. And you can see that that looks rather exponential, actually. And in fact, it is. If we plot it out on a logarithmic scale, that's more or less a straight line there. And this is actually quite interesting. Okay, so I mean, we know that inet nums and domains are pretty important because you know, inet nums are what people use to register their information in the database, and domains are useful for excuse me, for DNS and stuff like that. But root objects and autonym objects and ASSET objects, okay, they are relatively close to each other in terms of scale. And this is actually rather comforting for, to me, because it means that to a large extent, the IRDB is actually a success in its particular niche. Not the way it was originally envisaged. I mean, the original, you know, grand idea, like that, you know, we'd have the entire internet, you know, and you could press a button and it would, like, push out configuration and, you know, everything would be fine. That never happened, and frankly, it's not going to happen. But it does, this whole thing does have a very good niche role for filter prefix, or prefix filtering. And AS path filtering and that sort of stuff. In particular, IRR toolset implements it in a particular way that for inbound prefix filtering, all you need is you need to have a properly managed AS set of your own, which you can do because that's under your control, and you need your third parties to update the root and the root 6 objects and to make sure that they're consistent. And also to maintain their AS set and autonym objects to a very small extent. And of course, this is really useful because this is the sort of thing that you can just do once and you never really have to do it again, particularly, unless your routing policy is changing all the time or unless you're renumbering from one ASN to another. Unfortunately, outbound prefix filtering is pretty awful because rtconfig looks up third-party objects. So if I'm peering with somebody else, rtconfig will look at my autonomous system number object and their autonom object in the database. And unless they're fully consistent with each other, it will do something you know, slightly broken. Here's a good indication of how badly broken that particular part of the database is. This is the actual peering relationship database at INEX. We've 40 something members here. There's a couple who aren't in here because they asked for explicit opt out. This is the the IRR database thinks of what's going on here. And as you can see, it's a pretty serious problem. The green bits are where the routing policy is consistent, or consistent, yes, we peer. The red bits are consistent, well, no, we don't peer. And these little exclamation marks in orange and purple are, well, one side thinks we peer, and the other side thinks that we don't really peer, so we don't really know what's going on. But you can see that, whoops, it's not so good. So where does this leave RPSL? It leaves it as as a system which has a very important niche function. It's like multicast. Multicast, you know, was initially designed, you know, to deliver high content, high definition TV on demand and all this sort of stuff, and we found out that that really is a rather broken idea. RPSL, in the same way, is really useful, has a niche, and a lot of people use it out there rather quietly. It certainly did not meet its original specification. So there we go. That's all I have to say about it today. It would be useful to discuss RPSL in context of, you know, what to do with the actual specification, because the specification is far too complicated. It's difficult to code. It's got some things which are inherently difficult to manage. And if we go back to this graph, where are we here? If you have a look at the absolute numbers for things like router sets, I mean, there's literally only about maybe 8 or 10 router sets which have ever been, you know, inserted into the RIPE database. And INET routers and, you know, all of these things like are just so far down the scale that it's just, they're just hardly used. And, you know, sometimes I just wonder if everything below here shouldn't just be thrown into the bin, and, you know, maybe we just remove it from the RPSLNG specification. So, questions? Does anybody have any comments or opinions that they'd like to express?
Okay. This is Shane Kerr from ISC, and I'd mostly just like to say thank you for putting up with the horrors of the code. I've worked with it a bit, and it is very difficult to work with. And unfortunately, you've probably just made it useful enough that it's going to last another 10 years. So,
probably.
Jeff Houston. I'm just trying to understand where that slide said I got something working. And in my language, what I think I heard you said is, what I've got working are a bunch of filters that could filter origination.
Yes.
So in my parlance, what I heard was basically, you can do origination from this set, but not much else seems to work.
That is, yeah, that's about correct. We use it for exchange root servers, and in that context, it's really useful. I mean, there's never going to be an exact parity between what IXP clients announce to a root server and what the IRR database thinks they ought to be announcing, but it's sufficiently close that we can just sort of say, well, look, you know, just kind of make sure that your filters, or at least that your root objects are up to date. And if you're having problems with a particular prefix, well, look, you know, check that first.
Okay, thanks.
Was by Rüdiger. You are already on.
Chinese admitted. Okay, so let me get to the. Okay. Strange enough, it works. Okay, I'm Rüdiger Volk. I have been working with Deutsche Telekom and have been around RIPE for some years more. Over the recent years, I have been focusing and being allowed to essentially look into BGP policies, thinking about security there, and building configuration systems for this. What I want to do is report my personal views from a recent small workshop that ISOC had invited with, four people who are working on similar stuff like me. With the idea of outside the specific agendas of the IETF and the various operator groups to have a focus on, what can we actually do from an operator's point of view to practically improve the information that is passed around for routing purposes? This was a fairly small room, and we had a decent number of people from the larger networks. Actually, I figured out all of the participants were representing networks that were not only from three continents, but I think essentially all the operators were multi-continental. What happened? Actually, two of the most prominent content providers also had their engineering staff there with people who are dealing with the routing security stuff. The thing went a little bit more into, identifying requirements and options, we didn't really go after building an action plan. There will be, we expect that a common report will be published sometime. We don't even have a draft at the moment, and so the best I can do is present the personal view that I took from it, and some of the conclusions that I made personally. I'm not making very clearly the distinction in the talk, what's personal view, what's kind of group statement, because we haven't really worked out an agreed group statement. Just looking at how the discussions in that workshop helped for providing contributions at this RIPE meeting, I have to say, the workshop very definitely was helpful. Looking at the discussions and the results, there is nothing really spectacular, only few small surprises maybe. For going into more of the details, let me first try to chart a little bit a map of the area. We were interested in practical. We were interested in practical progress, which essentially means, well, okay, things that can happen short term. We did not really go into depth for longer term things. And well, okay, the interesting question is, well, okay, where is the boundary? And I tend to say, well, okay, for getting serious security, well, okay, we really need security elements in the routing protocols. And doing that is going to take a while. We know that work on routing security has been already around in the previous millennium. And, well, okay, it wasn't only RPSL, actually, the RPKI initiating work already started there. And a couple of years ago, there was a rush of discussions about BGP extensions for security, and that died down. And, well, okay, the expectation that in a sudden, within 6 months, we get to a conclusion how to do that doesn't look very likely. So, essentially, short-term practical means things that can be done without changing, adding something to BGP. And well, okay, put maybe allowing for very minimum development of additional router software. Having given that kind of map, let me jump over and well, okay, here I'm staying pretty close to our preliminary notes. I want to, go through the high priority items that the group identified, and well, okay, this is a sorted list. The highest importance actually was to ask the question, well, okay, is the group thinking that, well, okay, RPKI is actually worth something? And well, okay, I think it is not really surprising, but it is actually valuable information that, well, okay, all people agreed it is something, RPKI is something that we really ought to pursue. Now, the devil is in the details, and we'll have to see what particular we need to do. Second priority was that, well, okay, for the discussion of what are we expecting from the RPKI system, it was considered a very high priority thing that the RPKI system as such should provide uniqueness of the resources. Of course, with the caveat that during transfers, there will be transient data that where things are showing up in multiple places. But, well, okay, this is essentially the answer to the, or this is essentially the requirement we figured out for related to the question, do we demand a single routed system or not? Well, okay, we don't really mind about how many routes are there, but we think it is the responsibility of the top level entities in the system to assure that there are no conflicts between them. How they assure this? Well, okay, that's their job. But don't get back to us users and tell us, well, okay, you are relying parties. You can read the legal small print and figure out for yourself every time whether you believe Aaron or AP Nick or the devil. Okay, next item. And that was a small surprise for me. The question was raised, well, okay, guys, we have this IPv6 thing coming up. And, well, okay, we know IPv4 data is a huge lot and a mess. IPv6 still looks pretty nice and small. And I was surprised by the answer that the colleagues set up and said, well, okay, it should be a high priority to actually clean up the IPv6 thing before it gets big. And, well, okay, even do this under circumstance where we don't have the nice RPKIs, RPKI system immediately available, try to make sure that we start to operate with good authorization and allocation data in IPv6 as soon as possible. Of course, we are concerned about doing the IPv4 thing, but, well, okay, we know that's going to take some time. Then there was, well, okay, and some of the items are from the preliminary notes, and I have a little bit of trouble to figure really out what was said there. Essentially, most of the operators that were present are at the moment doing something where they have a database that is local to them and where they track the authentication. That's interesting. Track the resource holders or the sources and the allowed routes for their customers, and as we progress, we need to take care of this and make this better. A need for a certificate distribution and validation widget is kind of give us the software tools for actually accessing all of the RPKI data locally and, make that information directly available for whatever operational use we have. Next item on the list was, as we progress, we really want to reduce the cost of doing safe business. And, at the moment, the trade-off is very clear. If you want to operate safe, it's really expensive. And, we are not really sure where on the trade-off scale people are operating. We have examples and proofs that, in some cases, people actually have more checks in than we expected. But we also suspect that a lot of things, most of the operators are really on the cheap side of the trade-off scale. The question of what can be done about path validation was felt very important by some of the present parties. For essentially all of the other items, I think we had ideas how those items can be tackled for the path validation in short term. We did not see, as far as I remember, any ideas how solutions could be done. From the other notes, I also see that there are at least two items that were considered very worthwhile, but for whatever reason didn't make it to the top priorities. And these items are origin validation, which is something I will go into a little bit more specific later. And well, okay. The hint of, well, okay, folks, if you can't prevent things going bad, make use of monitoring services like some of the functionality that's available in RIPRIS. Well, okay, use it. So let me see. On currently used information, I didn't write down a lot. What I noticed was that quite obviously, the distinction and the distinct roles of the RIR allocation data and assignment data versus routing registry data obviously is getting pretty confusing to some people, and in some regions maybe more than in others. There was only me for a party mainly based out of Europe and from the RIPE region. I still claim that the situation based on the RIPE database is somewhat to be preferred over what we see in the other regions. I did hear and note that parties from the Aran region were saying, well, okay, we are not getting a full support for routing registry, and Aran in particular is actually introducing confusing information without specified semantics into their registry data. I was a little bit surprised there. One of the points that was kind of identified was that, folks there usually are trying to track the assignment to identities of organizations, and that of course is not really directly related to the autonomous systems and the routing system. In particular, there were complaints about, it's so damned hard to track the organizations because they all the time they are changing names and the organizations are changing and the relations between resources and so on. There is not only the problem that the databases in particular with do not really provide the direct relation to the routing system or even any kind of authorization, but people are forced to try to track moving targets, which is making things even worse. Let's move on to RPKI.